Hi, this is Tracy Watson, and welcome to the Laughing Mother Project, where we laugh at the days to come. Hi, mums. Welcome back to the Laughing Mother Project. Today, I'm really super excited about our special guest because she's our first Kiwi to be interviewed. Her name is Mel Collie. Mel, you're stylish, you're fun, you're amazing. But for me, the most cool thing about meeting you is that I just really feel that you know how to make people feel at home. And you've just got such a great capacity. And you've got four children. Can you tell us about your family?
Thank you so much, Tracy, for all those kind words. So our family, I have my husband, James, and he is 35. So he is like a business entrepreneur, people person, extrovert, and just really gifted in that business world and could kind of just take off, you know, would give the jacket office back to anybody.
Yes.
And like if you called him up and said, can you help me out, build a fence, he'd be there.
How cool is that? And I've seen, Chloe was in my class last year. James is a brilliant girl dad.
Yes, he is.
How kind is he?
Yes, so...
he really copes well with emotional things. Like some guys don't really
get
that.
He was more scared about having a son than having daughters.
Really?
Yeah, I think he feels more comfortable about women. So
so God gave him three.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
four of you.
Yes, so he was always fine around the girls, but
Okay, so tell us about your kids.
Okay, so then we have Chloe. She is 10, and Chloe is very intelligent. Like
yes.
I remember as a child, nothing had to be baby-proofed in the house. She was fluently talking before one.
Wow.
She could talk down these big stairs we had. She just would naturally turn herself around and walk down.
Wow.
And she was just so, really perceptive, intuitive, just has a real... very dramatic, theatrical, but has a real voice for justice and can't handle any injustice, which can sometimes be a little bit frustrating.
I can totally confirm. I saw
all
of that last year. Exactly.
So sometimes I'm like, Chloe, let it go, but she can't.
Well, that will come with maturity. It's actually a really cool gift to have.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's true. Yeah, it will come in handy. Georgie, she is definitely the way I would describe Georgia is a full-blown optimist. So she is like your glass half full. And I've just learned so much from her. And just, I've heard once that God gives us our children to help us learn and grow.
Yes.
And just seeing Georgia's attitude, she's so easily teachable and corrected, which I've learned so much from, not being that good at it myself. Like, I can just correct her about anything, and she doesn't, like, kind of go off and be devastated about it. She's just so easily correctable. She's so positive.
Resilient.
It's
great to have a teachable spirit like
it
that.
It is, and it's so refreshing and nice. I don't feel, like, nervous when I go to correct her.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and then, of course, animal lover. She wants to be a zoologist. So that's Georgie. Then we have Charlotte. She is 4. Charlotte, she's just like an old soul. Yeah, she's a real old soul. She, like my dad always says, it seems like she's always been here. Charlotte, she wouldn't seem sensitive, but she's very sensitive, very sweet, kind, onto it, astute, perceptive. And then Jack, who's 2, he's just our wild card, crazy little guy. You don't know if he's going to hug you or bite you, and he's just like, he's so different. Like, I can see the boy, like Jack being a boy and the girls being girls. It's just so different. So, yeah, it's just funny. He definitely keeps everybody on their toes. Classic fourth child.
That's actually cool having Jack. He's like the bonus.
He is. He just rips it up.
Yes.
He rips it up.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. I love your family. And, I mean, you're doing a great job because all of your children, they're beautiful. They're lovely.
Thank you.
Mel, while you were having this family, because your eldest is 11, or 10.
11 in January.
Turning,
yes.
Grace and her are twins.
Oh, that's right.
So, by 2 days. But can you tell me, you were studying, you've been studying while you've been having babies.
So, 2009 I started my law degree.
Yes.
I always wanted to do law. I remember saying it as like a young child that I wanted to do it. And then I had just met James and I said, I've always wanted to do law. And at the time I was studying communications. But I always remember doing communications, and although I liked it, I always felt like there's got to be more. The why yes. wasn't there for me. I was like,
yes.
I like, this is interesting and stuff, but I thought, like, the cameras and this and stuff, I didn't feel the kind of fulfillment inside of me. So I spoke to James one day, and he's like, why don't you do it? And I was like, maybe I should. So I exited out of communication and I did law. And then I think it must have been a couple of months later, I actually fell pregnant with Chloe.
Okay.
So I had just started the law degree when I did, so it must have been like 6 months in. So I decided to myself, Chloe was born in 2010, I started in 2009. I just decided that I wouldn't give up the law degree, and that even if I just was doing one paper at a time, I would always continue it, because I had seen so many people start degrees and not, like, so many stories that you'd meet, oh, I did it for 2 years and I didn't finish it and I've only got 1 year to go. And I also know my temperament so well, which is I'm kind of an all or nothing person. And so if I'd pulled myself out of the course or thought, okay, I'm gonna wait till I've finished having all the kids and then go back, it would have been too hard for me. I need to have like my one foot in the door. So I continued studying while I was pregnant. And then when Chloe was born, I took like 6 months off, or I may have done like an extramural paper. And then I went back just part-time. And then I did that part-time from 2009 to 2016 is when I graduated. So during that time, I had Chloe, Georgia, Charlotte.
You are tenacious, girl.
You are,
because I mean, I think that that's so wise. That's what I wanted to ask you, because I think that people sometimes just think, oh, that person's a natural academic, so it comes easy to them, and that's why they just carry on studying.
Yeah.
But for you, it seems like it's wisdom building your house, like you slowed things down.
Yeah.
And you've managed to balance both.
Yes.
And I'm sure there's days where you sort of second guess yourself, or it might have been overwhelming.
Yeah.
But I mean, gosh, tell us what's just happened in your life, what you've just
achieved. I finished in 2016, and then I had Jack. So in that last year of my studies, I did an internship with the police prosecution. So each week, 1 week I'd go to the police station, the other week I'd go to the Albany District Court. And so I did that, and that was quite hard being full-term pregnant with Charlotte, but I really enjoyed it because I was quite interested in criminal law.
Yes.
And then I had Jack, and now, 2020, I decided that I would do my law bar exam, which is actually like, you can either do it by 13 weeks or 18 weeks, and there's two like education providers. So I went through the College of Law and I did it over 18 weeks. And so last Friday I graduated, I passed. So I passed everything. And so that basically means I'll be admitted to the bar in January and I'll have a legal practicing certificate.
That is inspirational, really, Mel.
Thank you.
Gosh. So, but like now what, I know you've mentioned, because I think you're a phenomenal communicator.
Yes.
So it makes sense to me that you needed to find the why.
Yes.
But can you expand a little bit on that? Like, what is your passion?
Right. So I guess for me, I always felt like, and even if I go back to school, my phrase that I always said is I want to be a voice for the voiceless. And I want to
just say that again. I get goosies.
Yes. I want to be a voice for the voiceless.
Wow.
And I want to speak for those who can't speak for themselves. Those are the phrases I use. And so growing up for me, it was, I feel like everybody, God has given everybody gifts and talents and strengths. And I just am a total believer in working in those strengths and giftings. And for me as a young child, it was always there, always been a voice. I remember when I was 7 years old and my dad had been made redundant by his employer unfairly. He was unfairly dismissed. And coincidentally enough, they lived opposite us. Like, they lived on our street.
Yes.
I was 7 years old and I heard that my dad had been fired. And I said to my brother, who's older than me, I said, Nick, come on, let's go. And I walked across the road and I knocked on their door. And I remember saying, how could you fire my dad? You shouldn't have fired him. That's not right. He could be anything. He could be a fireman. He could be a police officer. And so for me, it's like when I think about why do I want to do law, it was a natural thing. Whether it be a friend at school who was being, another friend I would see would be mistreating her. I just remember being like picking up a phone and being like, don't talk to her like that. And so it was a natural thing for me to stand up for people. I hate to see people marginalised or not being able to speak up for themselves or being downtrodden. And so I can't watch it happen. I have to actually speak up. I couldn't.
It makes me think of that quote that says that a lot of bad things happen because good people remain silent.
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, exactly. The fact that you are one of those very few people, because it can also have a side effect of you not being popular sometimes.
Yes.
It kind of like you can stand up but then end up getting a bit of a backlash sometimes.
Oh, for sure. Like sometimes you'll leave things and you'll go, oh man, I feel later on you'll do that and you'll leave and you'll go, I feel a bit cringe now, should I not have said that? Or, but at the end of the day, I guess you have to think, are you doing what is right?
And yes.
You know, people won't always be happy if you are speaking out for others and it's calling them out. Not that I'm not overly confrontational. I wouldn't do that to hurt somebody.
No, you're really kind. Yeah, and I think that's what comes across, yeah, is the kindness.
I believe that the vulnerable people in life, like elderly, disabled, children, and just people with vulnerable personalities, can't always stand up for themselves.
Yes.
And if we can, with love.
Exactly.
Speak truth.
That's powerful.
Yeah, been an advocate, really.
And
I just feel like people do need advocates.
That is just so cool, because it makes me think that you've got accreditation now, but it's something that it's a gift that you were born with,
yes,
that you've got.
Yep.
So, yes, you've had to study and get the accreditation, but it's something that was in you, that God put in you.
Yeah.
So I just think that your whole life, God is going to, obviously, the fact that you've taken the time to put the hard hours in and juggle your family, God will honor that and make a way for you with that. But having said that, you and I spoke on the beach about dyslexia.
Yes.
And I just think that there might be people out there who would we can make lots of excuses. Why we don't go after our dreams and why we don't study further or whatever, you know. And being a teacher, sometimes people can also have something like a learning difficulty, and then they think that that puts a lid on them.
Yeah.
So what I love about your testimony is that you kind of prove that like you can have a voice, you can achieve what you want, you can still have a family, you can do all of these things if you put your mind to it.
Yes.
What would you suggest, like what would you tell people who have children with learning difficulties? Like this, it doesn't have to go along what I've just said, but like what are some tips to keep them encouraged or to help them with their learning?
Well, for me, so I struggled in school academically. I went to all public schooling. Socially is where I was like very popular, had a lot of friends, and so I loved that part, but academically from school was quite traumatizing. I was I was undiagnosed with dyslexia. It wasn't recognized, I think, until 2007. And so my mum did think something was up, but the teachers weren't open to it, which wasn't a surprise. It wasn't very well known then.
Yes.
So when I was pregnant with Chloe, and I just before I'd started my law degree, there was a thing in the Auckland paper or something like that about at Auckland University, they were doing like testing for people with dyslexia.
Gosh.
And so she said, why don't you go along and do it? And I thought, I suppose I should.
So how old were you then, roughly?
22.
Okay.
Yeah, 21
or
22. Oh,
gosh, so you'd spent that whole time at school struggling.
Yes, yeah. So I went along, and so there was like three rounds. And the first round was, okay, yes, you've come through with kind of like precursors of like this dyslexia. And then I did the second test, and they're like, yes, you've got it. So the third part was an MRI, because people with dyslexia actually have different brains. Like their brains look different.
I've heard, now just tell me, you might not even be able to answer this question, but I've heard that they can actually see more dimensions.
Yes.
Is there truth in that?
I think some people can, because it's not like everyone's the one fits all.
Okay, okay.
But I couldn't do that last bit of the phase because I was pregnant, and you can't have an MRI when you're pregnant. But so for me, after I had done that, I was then able to go to the University of Auckland. They have like a learning centre where I was again assessed through them, so I could have extra support and help at university, and I was assessed. So it's like a 3-hour assessment, and it came through that I have dyslexia and dyscalculia actually as well. And so for me, I guess to answer your question would be, it was up till I was 14, I wasn't doing well. So what would happen is the average person I find who doesn't have a learning disability could probably sit in this in classroom, maybe not try that hard, listen to the teacher, do a little bit of homework and kind of skate through. I couldn't do that. So if I don't work hard, the results won't be there, because I can't just wing it. So if I didn't put the effort in, that would be there. So what would happen is that my friends and I would kind of muck around, and that I would get my, I remember when I was 14 years old, I got my maths and English back. I got 8% in both, and I was devastated. Every test result that came around, I was devastated. So I went back, and my dad said to me, my dad always had these like ways of describing things. He said, look, every night your friends call up and you guys chat and you hang out and you do all this, but they've finished their homework and you're not doing it. And so they're doing well and you're not. How are you going to feel when you grow up and you pull up at the traffic lights next to them and they're in a really nice car and you're not, because they've worked hard and you haven't? And how are you going to feel?
I love this psychology.
Yeah. And I was like,
buy-in.
Yes. And I was like, I am going to feel so terrible. Like, I felt it. And from that moment, I had an epiphany. Like, it was literally that moment a light bulb switched on. So from that
Dad was a great teacher.
Yeah,
actually.
He is.
Because he helped you make that decision.
And it was just, it was like a light bulb. And so literally from that moment, and that was without a word of a lie, I spent every morning tea, lunchtime, and I stayed up till about 12 o'clock every night studying. So I went from fourth form, and I got 8% of maths and English, till the following year, which was NCEA level one. So I passed everything for fashion and design. I got excellences for every assignment. I got the award for the top.
Wow.
Yeah, for English and everything, I was getting merits. I was getting excellences for economics.
Now that is proof.
Yes. So for me, because I was undiagnosed, I knew at that point, my best friend was Tatum. So I knew if Tatum and I worked here the same, she's going to come out and she's going to do really well and I'm going to do averagely. Or if she doesn't do any work and I don't do any work, she's going to pass and I'm going to fail. So at that point, I had to make a decision. I thought, I know I have to work harder than everybody else. I know it. So people with dyslexia, I think they have to learn it like 7 times or 9 times more than the average person. So I actually came to terms with that. I can't sit here and go, this is unfair. I have to accept it. And this was back then.
That's powerful.
And this was me not knowing I had a learning disability. It was just kind of, it was inside of me. And then I started to learn ways how I learn. So I know for me that I like creative things. So I can't be bland. Like, I have to have highlighters. I need colour. I need to underline things. I need to write things. So like, if I go back to my science exams, you have to learn so many concepts. I'm not going to just remember them like that, because people with dyslexia, their short-term memory isn't as strong. So all of the little, like, the words that I had to learn, I would put them into like little phrases. So,
oh, yes.
So I'd get each letter from every word, and then I'd make up a poem. And
wow.
And then I would go into the exam straight away and I'd write out that poem because I would remember them. And that's how I ended up doing well.
Sure.
So I guess for me,
it's key to anyone. So, everybody's life.
You do. And like, I know I'm a morning person. So if I go back to just doing my bar exams, people say, how do you do it? I prioritized it. So I know I do not study well at night time. Like, I turn into a pumpkin. I don't do that. And for me, I'm just a daytime person. So if I'm going to meet up with people for coffee, it'll either be first thing in the morning or it'll be last thing in the day, because I can't actually physically go into the office, work for a little bit, go for a coffee and come back. It's too unsettling for me, because to get your brain into it, I have to actually, when I go sit down, I'm in it for the day and I actually just commit to that. So I've learned strategies of how I learn, and I really work to those strengths now. And I just know it's going to take me longer. So they say 27 hours per week for profs. I did much more than that. I was in there every day plus evenings. I would just look over the stuff. I wouldn't work, but I was constantly kind of committing myself to it. And so a big thing for me is saying, how does your child learn? If you think that they have a disability, get them tested, because early intervention is key. See, for me, I wasn't. And that's what I find in the Christian world can be quite hard, where we're in an environment where it's very much speak and believe, don't speak it out. Unfortunately, a lot of parents can see being diagnosed as a negative thing. It's not negative. Having dyslexia isn't negative, and there is a lot of prejudice out there, and that's why I am very careful who I tell, because even at law school, when I was tested, I would say to a tutor, as it was advised by the Student Learning Centre, Melanie, go speak to them and just let them know you have dyslexia, and so you might need this or that explained. And I would speak to them, and they would tell, but you seem really intelligent, you don't seem dumb.
Yes.
Which then it makes you feel like, oh gosh. And so quite often people've got a misjudgment of it, and they don't understand it, and I understand that. It's lack of education, and you can't know, and I'm totally open about talking about it, but getting tested is key. And from as young as 4 or 5, they can be tested. And what it means is that self-esteem isn't ruined. So for me,
yes.
When I was at law school and I was in family law and I was getting A's in those papers, and for one of my last assignment, my written assignment I did for my law bar exam, I got 11 out of 12. I still can't believe those marks because of the trauma at school.
Yes.
Being misunderstood, undiagnosed. There's a lot of trauma there for me in the classroom. And so for me to get those grades, it's like, is that actually real? Did I do that?
Yes.
Like, because you're still walking out that trauma from school.
And you know, that's what I also think. I want to, while you're just thinking of this, I want you to tell us whether you think there are some flags that can be picked up that maybe might mean going for testing. Because I really agree with that. I think sometimes people want to deny that there is an issue.
Yeah.
And but in so doing, it can sometimes cause more damage.
Absolutely.
Instead of equipping and empowering your child to overcome those things. Because actually, the longer I teach, I've realized everybody has areas.
They do.
Everybody has areas that they have to find creative ways of navigating.
Yeah.
And so some to a greater degree than others, but nobody is sailing through every single subject and doing everything perfectly, right?
No.
So, and I think there's also something that's very important to think about is that there is knowledge, which is facts, but there's wisdom, which is a completely different thing. So you obviously have wisdom in bucket loads because you've had wisdom on how to just govern yourself as well.
Yeah.
So flags?
The flags would be, for me, I can actually see it in little children if I spend enough time with them. And I know it's like what we go through in life. We can only see in others what we've seen in ourselves.
Yes.
So for me, it would be reasoning skills. Like I think of it as linking.
Okay.
So if you can look at a child and you're like, they're not making those connections with things. They're not linking it would be one thing. And I guess all the normals like...
Memory,
definitely. Like if they're kind of forgetting things and they're not remembering as much things on the book, not writing their name as early, and because normally people with dyslexia it does come hand in hand with other things. Like often they've got other things, like they could have ADHD or ADD. Often those things are linked together. I guess for me would be spending time with a child and going, okay, they're not really linking it together. Like that's how sometimes I feel like I remember, like, I can read, right? I can obviously read fine. And for me at school, because of the trauma at school, I would completely fine at reading, but it was the comprehension. So even at law school, when they'd say, everybody read this out loud, I would, like, they're going to go around in a circle and they're going to say, you're going to have to get to that point. But you don't know what point you're going to get at. So I pretty much skimmed through every word to make sure I would know it because I was in such fear of not being able to say the word out loud. So I can read fine, but if I don't know the word... It's very hard for me to actually sound it out. If it's an unforeign word, I can't sound it out.
Yes.
So I don't know where I was going with that, but...
Yes, well, it's a flag spelling, actually the blends.
But and the memory, like about... So if they can do it the night before, but then they can't do it in the morning.
Yes.
That's not normal. An average child will be able to remember those words from the day before.
And as a teacher, I do find sometimes you might teach a process like long division.
Yeah.
The child gets it.
Yeah.
The next day, they cannot remember
and
the process.
They have listened.
They have listened beautifully.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's helpful to like write down the process so that they always have that because it's not necessarily the maths, but that they just have the steps next to them. I do that on the board. I hope that's helpful so that they...
So for the reading thing, like, so I could, if you gave me a passage right now, I could read it absolutely fine. You would be like, Melanie's an effective reader. That's fine. But if you were going to say to me, what did you just read? If I was nervous in a situation, I'm thinking about children, I wouldn't retain it. And two, if it's something completely foreign to me, I won't retain it as well. So that's why I remember at school when the teacher would say, read this book, now tell me what did she do and what went on. That was just so hard for me. So I recently did a course through Spelled on dyslexia, and it was really, really interesting. And a lot of, basically what they've said is the normal way of teaching, the traditional way of teaching, suits your average academic child, but it does not suit anybody with a specific learning need. And if we could change that environment to suit the children with specific learning needs, it wouldn't hurt the other children. It would actually help them. But the way we're doing it is like, this environment of being quiet, listening to a teacher, it just doesn't suit people with learning challenges. You can't concentrate, first of all. You need you to sit there that long and to be listening. It's just your brain that can't physically concentrate. Writing off the board, copying off the board, there's no point in doing it for someone with a specific learning need. It's pretty much like if I were to put on the board like a whole lot of symbols and you're going to write them down, it would mean nothing to you. It's not going into the brain, it's not doing anything effective. It's more stressful for that child to actually copy those words onto the paper. They're concentrating so much on that, there's no gain from it. They'd be better off taking a photo or having a printout and probably highlighting it.
You see, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's actually... and
such an easy thing to do that can be really life-changing for them.
And then getting them to say things out loud.
Okay.
Like, it's just too stressful. It doesn't help. Like, a test out loud. The trauma from them, I know that feeling as your gut, you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to answer it. It's just so stressful. And that I think people with dyslexia, the average person, I can't, like, what can they remember? 10 points. And someone with dyslexia can remember 3. So they're just, they can't keep up their short-term memory. They need hands-on things. And I think for me, it would be helping them to be explained in an example. Like for me, when I just did my bar exam, a lot of it was commercial property, and that's obviously James's area of work. So what I would say to James is, I don't know what they're talking about here. Could you please put this into an example in our life for our business?
Yes.
And he'd say, okay, this is like Sally from work.
Yes.
And that person. And when he did that, the light bulb would come on.
Oh, yes.
So you need to give them an example, a picture.
Story.
So a story. I need, when I was at school, I needed an example for everything. Like, okay, the things that seem obvious to the average person with someone with a specific learning need, nothing's obvious. You need an explanation. So
yes.
I always felt like I missed the most obvious things. So even when I was at law school, I didn't realise that you're meant to do these two papers together because they kind of help each other, they work together. So I did it the opposite way. Now, it worked out fine, everything was fine, but it would have been more helpful to do it like that. How did I miss that? I don't know. But sometimes things like that happen, and it can disadvantage you, because what seems obvious to people isn't always obvious to someone with a specific learning need.
Now, you know, that's what I just think is so powerful, is that if you have been diagnosed, you can receive the support.
Yes.
Otherwise, you can be receiving the back end of judgment.
Yes, absolutely. So at law school, because I was assessed, what it meant is that I had 20 minutes per hour extra than everybody else. But what that also meant, because I had the extra time, so I had 20 minutes extra, I was in my own room by myself with my own examiner. And so in law school, because these are open book exams, you're at these tiny little desks and everyone's got these printouts. Well, I'm visual and I'm creative. So what it meant is I'm in a room pretty much this size. I would come in there early. I would rearrange the desk so in a way that, because I'm very, like, my environment is very important to me. And I would lay my papers out in like a chronological order that were all highlighted. I couldn't do that in that environment. Not only would it be very stressful, my papers, I'd be confined to this, which suits the person who's very academic. They can just look through it. But because I'm visual, I need them out. I need the colours. And
yes.
So even, it wasn't just the time, it was the layout. And so that really helped me, because even going forward in life, it's not like I'm going to be at a tiny little desk.
Yes.
And having to do that. Like, you can actually edit things when you're an adult to help your specific learning needs, but often as a child you don't have that advantage.
Yes. You know what, even when you're talking, I'm just thinking of people listening. They're not getting to see how beautiful you are and that you use your hands when you talk. But even while you're talking, I'm just thinking that God uses the foolish to confound the wise. And I'm not saying that it's foolish, but I'm saying that sometimes what we think, like, you are a brilliant communicator. Because of the fact that you obviously like things done methodically,
yes,
and you like an example. So what I'm saying is that sometimes we think somebody's wise because they get something quickly, but actually,
yes,
sometimes to need to have to try and work it out. I'm like that for myself. I've never been diagnosed with dyslexia, but I know that I really struggle with learning when somebody teaches me something. I actually have to sit and go and teach it to myself, and I think that's what makes me a teacher.
Yes, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes your,
yeah.
I don't mean that really. I mean, like,
no.
Sometimes your weakness can actually become your very strength.
Yeah. And I can just see it differently. Like, even when I was at law school the whole time, front of the classroom, because for one of the lectures, I sat there, most of the students were on their computers and on Facebook, Instagram. Too distracting for me. I'm so easily distracted. So I sat right at the front. Everybody else typed on their computers. I wrote. So for me, I once heard that
writing is very important.
Writing
mirrors onto your brain.
Yes. So, and because they're speaking so fast, your brain is actually pulling out the most important piece of information and putting it on the paper.
Awesome.
Yeah. And when you're typing, you're writing it all because you have enough time, because you can type that fast.
Oh, yes.
So I actually, one lecture, I thought, okay, I'm just going to type like everybody else. I went out of the classroom and I didn't even know what we just learned. Like, I typed it all, but I hadn't actually absorbed it.
Yes.
So the whole of my law school, I wrote everything. And so what happened was, when it came to exam time, although everyone had all their typed notes, they could print them out for the open book, I had to then go type them up. But it was another form of learning. So I had my book, I wrote, I had my highlighter, and I just did these things that I knew worked for me. I sat at the front of the classroom. I arrived early. So throughout my whole law school, I didn't miss a day. So I, like I was saying earlier about keeping my foot in the door with doing my law degree, I know myself. If I miss a day, I'm so hard on myself. I'm like, it's over sort of thing. So I knew, even if I was sick, James knows this about me as well. I would never miss a class. I would go there. Sickness.
I'm starting to understand Chloe here. Chloe wants to do everything perfectly.
Yeah, so I did that. But and so it just meant if I was going to have a handout that hadn't been explained by somebody speaking, it means it's little value. Even if a friend sent me her notes, I'm not there. I don't know what they mean. They haven't been explained. I haven't heard it from the teacher. So the other people's notes were of no help to me. I had to do it myself. And I learnt ways to get through my law degree. Like, there was obviously a lot of reading. I can't do that amount of reading.
I mean, of all the degrees.
Yes, I know. So I didn't do it. Like, so there was thousands of cases. So there was kind of like short bits of cases. I would kind of get around it in that way, because I knew if I sit through reading those cases over and over, it's not going in. It's not my strength.
Yes.
So I would kind of, I would get supplement notes, then I would get little blurbs of them, and that would help me kind of actually understand them and comprehend them, because it wasn't actually helpful reading those over and over. I couldn't, and a lot of the English is quite ambiguous, and it was just
jargon. That's just unnecessary.
Yeah.
Mel, I find it so inspirational. I really do. I think that, like, you know, sometimes people can also be diagnosed with something and let it be an excuse that they hide behind, and then it limits them. So I just love the fact that you are actually speaking life, and, you know, like you said earlier on, don't admit it because we're speaking life. Yeah. But that's, to me, that's more life. Like,
it is.
You know?
When I was diagnosed at 22, this is how I can describe it. I felt like chains were broken. Weight was lifted off my shoulders, and the light bulb was on. For the first time, it explained why at school I tried hard, yet I would get... So even when I tried that hard, I was still getting grades as people who weren't trying that hard. And although I did that back then and I accepted it, it still was like, why is this happening? There were times where you felt like, this is unfair. But when that was explained to me and I started learning and researching about dyslexia and the giftings that can come with it, then it just explained everything to me, and it made so much sense, and I felt set free. So
I'm just thinking that the truth set you free. Yeah. I mean, how powerful. I get goosies when you say that.
It's like, that's why I've had friends who haven't had their kids tested. I'm like, get them tested. That's my number one thing. Get them tested. There's no hurt in it. And then you can find out their strengths and their abilities.
Yes.
Like, even during my bar exams, although I did do really well in my written stuff, I did shine in my verbals, because I love communicating with people, and it does come more naturally to me than writing.
Yes.
So there has been times where I'm like, should I be doing law? The thought of sitting in front of a computer with paper is like, that is just, it's not what I'm born to do. So I'm just praying that God will open up an avenue that I can use his giftings.
Definitely.
Yeah, but that isn't so, you know, like written.
Well, you spoke about the voice.
Yes.
You spoke about the voice.
Yeah.
And you've got the accreditation, and you've got the testimony and the experience. There's something in the Jewish language, which is called Yada. I don't even think I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's knowledge gained through experience, which I think you're so rich in.
Okay.
You're so wealthy that, you know. That is like a voice.
Yeah.
So, ladies, I just absolutely loved the day that I met Mel. We've got a big age gap between us, and yet I just feel that in my heart I have this, like, sister love for her, because... I've got the story of the fact that I always used to be scared of being in closed spaces. And Doug once said to me, you're a Christian, you shouldn't be scared of that. You know, like, we had to get on aeroplanes, and I didn't feel comfortable getting on aeroplanes. But the one day I just said, okay, I'm going to take this to the Lord. I'm going to sit there and say, Jesus, what is going on? Why do I battle with this? And, you know, it could track back to the fact that when I was younger, I had double pneumonia, and I had to spend some time in an oxygen tent. I didn't know what the route was, but I just know that I just didn't feel comfortable being in a closed space. And I felt the Lord say to me that he designed me like that because I love freedom. I don't like being put into a box. I'm a teacher. I don't like putting children into a box. And for the times that I needed to sit in a confined space, like on an airplane, his grace would be sufficient for me. And so I just loved meeting Mel and knowing her as a friend, because I just love the fact that she's in pursuit of freedom, and she doesn't let anything that might be a limitation stand in the way of her living fully in her freedom. And I think that's such an invitation for others as well to walk in the full freedom that Jesus paid for us to enjoy. It is for freedom's sake that Jesus went to the cross, so that for whom he has set free is free indeed. And so I just loved everything that Mel had to share. I loved the part where she said that her chains just fell off when she found out what her learning difficulty had been, and what a testimony to what she has achieved. She's still on her mother journey. She's got 4 children, and I'm just grateful for these stories that are coming in. Thanks for sharing your time with us. Thanks for listening. God bless you. God give you wisdom as you bring your children up, and let them be freely all who God created them to be. And till next time, have a lovely evening or day or morning, wherever you're living. God bless.